This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross of VSiN will join us. We will discuss the day that was in the NFL, talk some Monday Night Football, get his thoughts on college football playoff. As you know, if you've heard before, Dave Ross is a Met fan, so maybe we'll give him a minute to gloat about Juan Soto being a New York Met. Not going to give him too much time to talk about that, because we've got a lot of football to talk about. And it was a weird day. It was a weird day because usually all of the action is slanted towards the 1 o'clock games on these Sundays, the early window on the East Coast, 1 o'clock Eastern. And then 4 o'clock is kind of wind down. You get one good game, one kind of okay game, usually one bad game. Usually there's only three games, four at most in the late window. This week, you not only had five games in the late window, you had the really good games. Bills, Lions, Eagles, Steelers, Bucks, Chargers is a good game, at least going in, you know, two playoff teams. So this was really weird. The early games were really tough to watch. There was a lot of bad quarterback play, a lot of turnovers. The Cleveland-Kansas City game was a turnover fest. I think Cleveland ended up with six turnovers. The Bengals-Titans game ended up with 10 turnovers combined. So really weird in terms of the balance of the day. But I will start with a couple of big picture things. And, you know, the biggest one of all, there's really not much to say because we don't know, with Patrick Mahomes getting hurt, possibly a high ankle sprain. He's going to have x-rays. They play the Texans next week, and they still need two wins to wrap up the one seed, or a combination of a win and, you know, Bills loss. Their magic number is two, any combination of Chiefs wins and Bills losses. So do you take the approach, hey, we'll try and get Mahomes out there, we'll gut it out with him, try to get our wins, and then we'll try to get him a lengthy break, hopefully like week 18, we can rest him, then the wild card round, then we give him, you know, by the time the second round comes around, maybe he gets like 3 weeks off and he's good to go? Or do you try and front load the rest and say, hey, let's try to steal games with Wentz, who's, you know, won games in the NFL, was a good player, you know, years back with the Eagles before his career deteriorated. And with our play calling, our defense, who's been, you know, at least a little bit better today, causing turnovers, we can figure out a way to win some games without Mahomes, and then we'll get him his rest that way. I don't know how they're going to play it, but obviously this does throw a huge monkey wrench into, you know, the AFC landscape, where, hey, if the Chiefs don't have Mahomes, or this the top version of Mahomes, they're going to be a non-factor. That being said, we've seen Mahomes gut it out. He got hurt 2 years ago in the playoffs against Jacksonville in the division round, finished that game, gut it out for the Cincy game, got 2 weeks off, and then won the Super Bowl against Philly. So he's taking these hits and coming back and rebounded. So it's something, obviously, to monitor. It's a huge story. I just don't know, you know, what the story is. I don't think you can count Kansas City out at this point, because, hey, maybe they can win games without him and get him the one, but it does certainly hurt their chances of, of getting back to the Super Bowl and three-peating. Injuries are part of the game, obviously. I want to see him out there. The game is just so much better without him out there, and you're going for a three-peat, something unprecedented, something historical. I don't want it to be deterred by an injury. Now, if they lose straight up, hey, it's part of it, and nobody's going to feel bad for Kansas City. People root for Kansas City to lose, but just as a football fan, I want to see if the Chiefs are going to go out. I either want to see Mahomes get the three-peat or somebody beat him. I don't want it to be, you know, a bum ankle situation. So we'll keep an eye on that. And the other story is the Lions. The Lions just got absolutely buried. And you could take it from halftime of the Thanksgiving game against the Bears. They have been awful defensively. They could have easily lost to that Bears game if the Bears didn't implode on that Thursday on Thanksgiving. The Packers, that was a toss-up game. That game could have gone either way. Lions, converted a bunch of fourth downs near the goal line. They held onto the ball last, but that was a coin toss game. And then today, just from the start, the Bills just absolutely buried them. 9 yards per play. Just complete domination by the Bills offense. And now, you can't look at Detroit and say, hey, they're unequivocally the best team. They're in the conversation now. You put them up there with Philly and I guess a healthy Kansas City, a Buffalo, even maybe a Baltimore. There's four or five teams and they're near the top. They're among those teams. They're in that group, but they are no longer, it's no longer a case where Detroit is far and away the best team. And it's just, it's very difficult to win a defense that's that bad. And they are a bad defense right now. Hutchinson, that loss didn't hurt them immediately a couple months ago when they lost him against the Cowboys where he broke his leg, but they've had injuries since. And it's, we're a long ways removed from them burying the Titans and the Jags and winning these games by 50 points and looking like just this unbeatable juggernaut of a team. They're still really good, but they look, if you're Minnesota now, Minnesota controls their destiny. Minnesota plays Monday night here against the Bears. If Minnesota wins out, Minnesota wins the North. So the one seed is still up for grabs. Usually when you're Detroit and, well, what are we, 10 days away from Christmas coming into Sunday, we're, you know, a week and a half away from Christmas. Detroit only had one loss going into this Sunday. usually when you only have one loss this late in the year, all right, one seed, division, you got a bunch of stuff wrapped up. They got nothing wrapped up. They're no lock to win the division. They're no lock to be the one seed. And their schedule coming up at Chicago, Goff outdoors. Chicago plays them tough. The 49ers and then the Vikings to wrap. They might lose another game or two along the way. And again, they are no lock here to wrap up this one seed. So Detroit has certainly fallen off. Now, maybe, hey, they rally here. They win their next three games. They get a bye. They catch their breath. And then they look reinvigorated coming into the playoffs. And they start the playoffs in the second round in their building. That's possible. But you got to be very concerned here if you're Detroit with the way they've played defensively. They've just been awful here defensively for a pretty long time here. So those are the big takeaways. Mahomes' injury and the status here with Detroit and all their injuries defensively and them just being a bad defense this last few weeks, and they are not trending in the right direction. The other big game, Philly just completely destroys Pittsburgh on the stat sheet. I know it was close for a little bit. How you punt there if you're Tomlin? You're down 14. I'm sure people saw this. Maybe if you didn't, I'll explain. There is about 10 minutes to go in the game, I think. Pittsburgh's down 14. They have a 4th and 7. They're on the other side of the 50, and Tomlin punts the ball, and he basically never saw the ball back. I think Philly just ran out the clock. Philly just got first down after first down after first down. That game stayed under miraculously. And Pittsburgh never saw it again. And they didn't deserve to see it again. That was just a gutless decision. I know Tomlin, good leader of men, always gets his teams to overperform. Always these winning seasons. But man, he does some strange, and strange is being kind, he does some stupid things in terms of game management. You can't punt the ball there. But Pittsburgh was completely dominated on the stat sheet. Now Watt is banged up going into their game Saturday against the Ravens, a big game. They do get a break because they play the Chiefs the next week. And hey, if Mahomes isn't Mahomes, that does help the Steelers. But the Steelers now, I'll be interested to see what those division odds reopen at with them losing, Baltimore killing the Giants as we all expected. Maybe Pittsburgh like a minus 130, minus 140 favorite. Pittsburgh is no lock now to win this division. And I think Baltimore will beat them head-to-head on Saturday. And they'll be tied with 2 weeks to go. Pittsburgh would still have the tiebreaker because of the conference record. But Pittsburgh still has another game against the Chiefs. And they still have a division game against the Bengals, which they could lose. And Baltimore still has the Texans too. But that division is far from over in terms of the AFC North. So we will. We got some great games coming up. Monday night, we have two games. Then we have the all the college football playoff games Friday, Saturday, two NFL games Saturday. You have a Saturday with three college football playoff games and two NFL games. Man, it is just so much fun. It is going to be such a blast to watch all this stuff. So those are the big takeaways from the day. I'll just get into the games for Monday. I have a hard time laying the points with Minnesota. I do think they're a good teaser leg if you can attach that to something next week. They just haven't been trending in the right direction. Atlanta gained over 7 yards per play against them last week. They fumbled the kickoff, and that game was close, and then it got away from Atlanta. And the week before, Arizona outgained Minnesota by over 200 yards. So if anything, I would try to get a cheap 7 and take the points with the Bears division game, figure the Bears off that embarrassment. We'll keep it close. It'd be Bears or nothing. Nothing I'm dying to bet. And I actually do like Atlanta laying the 5, 5.5 on the road against the Raiders. It's Ritter. Atlanta needs the game. Atlanta hasn't won it forever. Atlanta still has a pretty good offense. The Raiders are just a disaster right now. So do you love the idea of laying over a field goal, laying that many points on the road with Atlanta? No. But I think Atlanta winning the game by 7 or 10 points is certainly within reach. So I actually do like Atlanta in this Monday night game. So that is the football. We'll see what Dave Ross thinks. That is next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. You can catch him on VEASAN, the Lombardi line, as we know it. It is the great Dave Ross. He is back. He is here. We're not going to gloat about Soto. Maybe I'll give you a minute on Soto at the end, but it's a football Sunday. First of all, welcome. How are you? And
I am well.
Go. All right. I'm glad you're well. I'm happy you have your new outfielder. Let's start with football, though. I guess the biggest takeaway for me, the Lions. 3 weeks ago, a month ago, you would have said it. I would have said, anyone would have said, hey, the best team in the league is the Lions. It's not really a close second. If there is, hey, it's Detroit and everybody else. Do you still feel that way? Not just because they lost, but this is now a few weeks in a row. They have not played good defense at all. It's hard to win it all with a bad defense. Where are you at here? What's your concern level with Detroit?
You know, they've kind of been already made for the pick in the last couple of weeks. I mean, they almost gave away that game to the Bears if the ineptitude of the Bears didn't cost their head coach's job in that terrible Thanksgiving Day collapse. And we've seen it even against the Packers on the Thursday night after, where it felt like the Packers are a play away from possibly winning that game in Detroit. And then another week, here we are in Detroit. And this time, I know they made it look close with some cosmetic late, but never really felt like they were in this game. Could not, and nobody has an answer for Josh Allen. He's the runaway MVP. We all understand that. But the bigger concerns are now without Hutchinson, and you were waiting for it to show without Hutchinson. And then Anzalone, when you lost him. And I started to go, okay, now you're losing a key linebacker. You lose a key edge rusher, not just any edge rusher, but an elite guy. At some point, the back end, if they can't get pressure up front, is going to start to really show itself. And it did today. Look, I love the Vikings' opportunity now to still win this division. And if that happens, then Detroit has to go on the road in the postseason and leave the confines of that dome. And I don't know where that would be, but let's just say hypothetically, you know, they got to go on the road to Philadelphia. Well, that becomes a much tougher matchup for them. And look, I like Dan Campbell. This is not an anti-Dan Campbell thing, but I find it comical that, like, hey, we go for onside kicks when we're down 10 with 12 minutes to go in regulation. You know, we don't kick field goals when obviously we can make it a three-possession game in the NFC title game a year ago against San Francisco. We don't do these things because that's who we are. Well, sometimes you got to worry about winning the game instead of that bravado and machismo of that's who we are. And I do worry that you keep making decisions like this. They're very, very good. They are an elite football team. We get it. They're going to be in every game. Hard to blow them out. But you keep making decisions like that when you don't have to make decisions like that. At some point, it's going to bite you. This team, if they have to go on the road, if they don't win the division, Will, I don't think that's going to be a recipe for this team to go all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and look, I understood the onside kick today because they weren't getting any stops, and hey, let's get a shot at the ball. This is where I missed the surprise onside kick where, hey, with 12 minutes to go, right. Was it 11 minutes to go, 12 minutes to go, that you might have caught them off guard with a surprise onside. You might get the ball back. Now, when you have to dictate it and declare it, it makes it a lot tougher. I understood it, though, and obviously it backfired, but yeah, they are really just a poor defensive team right now, and you can't be this bad defensively and win.
No, isn't that the dumbest rule change in the history of the NFL? I don't even understand it. I get it. They're saying, well, safety, right? So I turn my back and then somebody's going to hit me because I don't see the onside kick. Like, are you serious? We're talking about 10 yards of running. That's it. And that's for safety that we have to declare? Are we 10 years old? College kids don't have to declare. Well, you can still blow up the kids.
Right.
But for some reason in the NFL, we've made that rule change. It's a terrible rule change. And you're right. It makes that decision, though, to me, a little bit more negligent because it makes it that much harder to get it when you have to declare. So I get it if it was a surprise, to your point. But the fact that you have to declare it, that's why if I'm Dan Campbell, I still see if they have to go to the long field, and maybe Josh Allen makes a rare mistake. Maybe you hold him to a field goal. It's almost like it keeps you within that 2-touchdown frame there. That's the only reason why, because I hate the rule. And because of the rule, it makes it that much harder to get him.
Yeah, I mean, I get it from their perspective. Hey, I think Buffalo averaged over 9 yards per play. And like,
oh my God.
You know, even if you don't get the onside kick, as long as they start at the 50, we could still hold them to a field goal from that perspective. They're probably going to move the ball anyway. But, it's funny now, Minnesota, we talked about them all summer as a sleeper. You liked them even more than me, even though I'm a Viking fan. Minnesota now controls their own destiny. If Minnesota wins out, Minnesota is the NFC North champ. Now that would include going into Detroit and winning week 18 probably. But the way Detroit's playing, I don't think that's impossible. And Minnesota, people forget, they had the ball and the lead very late in the first meeting.
Yeah, they had it. They had I believe it was a 2-point lead late, and they had a key third down play that if they convert a first down, they're pretty much going to beat Detroit at home. That didn't happen. Obviously, they had to punt the ball back, and the rest is history. But I'm with you. I got an 11-1 ticket on the Vikings to win this division, and I feel a whole lot better about it today than I did yesterday. And again, can they go into Detroit and win? Absolutely. Like that offense right now and their receiving core and that offensive line, even though they lost their left tackle a couple weeks ago, when you lose Darisaw, you think, all right, maybe this is going to be the end. They make a trade, if you remember, right before the trade deadline. And I know maybe Cam Robinson is everybody's cat's meow, but they address the need immediately. And that's when they tell me that KOC and company, they're serious about this thing. Hey, if we get to that game against Detroit and the division's on the line, I mean, everybody's going to be picking Detroit. All the pressure technically would be on Detroit. It's kind of like house money for Minnesota if they get a one-game playoff, if you will, to be a division winner and then host a playoff game. I like where Minnesota sits. Now, you got to beat Chicago tomorrow night on Monday night. I think they'll get that done. But still, everything is right there in front of the Vikings going forward.
How do you think the Chiefs play this from the home? Is they're going to go for MRIs, maybe high ankle? The market seems to think he's not going to play versus the Texans. The Texans have moved to like three point favorites after being 3 point dogs. Do you think the Chiefs just say, hey, we'll sit you for a bit. We'll try to pick up a win later. Do you try and win now and then close out the one? Like, how do you handle this if you're Kansas City? It's really a tough call.
Knowing Mahomes and knowing the way every time we think he can't go, he goes, right? So if this line flip tells us one thing, I would not follow that money right now because everybody's not a doctor. And you know they're going to play coy with this all week. And I think if you can get that win and essentially wrap up the one seed with 2 weeks to go, that's the way I'd play it. Because you still have Pittsburgh coming up on Christmas Day, and that's in the Steel City. That's not going to be easy. Not the way Steelers can get after the football. I know J.J. Watt got hurt today too.
T.J. Watt, yep.
Which one was it? Yeah, he got hurt today. So he's out. I don't know if he's going to be able to go next week against that Ravens game, which is a massive game there. But if you lose TJ and he can't go against Kansas City in a couple weeks, all of a sudden the Bills could be live if Kansas City doesn't have Mahomes. But something tells me he'll figure out a way to rally, play this game, get that win, wrap up the one seed, and then maybe sit him the last two.
Yeah, and it's tough for Kansas City because just doing it in my head, Buffalo has – the three losses. Kansas City has one, so you're still going to need two, though, just because Buffalo beat you head-to-head. So
head-to-head.
You're going to need two wins. Your magic number is two, and I don't think Buffalo's losing it. I think they have two games against New England and one at home against the Jets, so you might need to win two. So it's not like you can just get your win and then, hey, we're done. We can sit them for basically a month with our bye. You might need two wins. Very, very tough situation here for the Chiefs.
It is, and then I guess the other side of it is you say, well, do I rest him to try to get ready for Pittsburgh? It's really hard equation. Like, how do I get those two wins to hold on to one seed? Because now if this injury is legit, right, this high ankle, whatever this might be for Mahomes, if it's really that serious, and normally those are kind of a multiple-week type deal traditionally, right, high ankles, if that's in fact what it is, you look at it and you go, well, we need the one seed now because of that injury, yeah. Right? So, I mean, he's gone through this before with these ankles before in these almost exact situations and somehow played through them. Yeah, I think they're looking at it and saying, if he can go on Sunday, we got to have him out there against Houston. Nice win over Miami, but I don't think Houston really scares you too much if you have 15 back there.
Any other big takeaways from the day? A lot of ugly football, especially early. Denver Indy late was a mess. Taylor dropping the ball like an idiot at the one. My goodness. A lot of ugly games early with turnovers. The Cleveland game was interesting. Take it whatever direction you want.
Yeah, I look at it and I look at next week already and I go, okay, Pittsburgh kind of waved the flag after you get the big Najee Harris. I mean, it's literally a pitch back. It's 20-13. You're going in. You're about the Eagle 35 going in for the potential tying score. And that really flipped that game. And then you started to realize late, not that they waved the flag, but they realized this game really doesn't matter. It's an out-of-division game. If we win next week in Charm City, we wrap up the division. And that is massive, obviously, for Pittsburgh. If you really think, like, wow, could they go to Baltimore? Absolutely, they can go to Baltimore and win. They seem to play Lamar Jackson better than most will. And I think they look at this and they go, yeah, this is a built-in buy for us. This 1 week, forget about the last 2 weeks. Then that Kansas City game wouldn't matter that much. Cincinnati wouldn't matter that much to wrap up the season. They could almost play it loose in the last 2 weeks if they get this one win in Baltimore, wrap it up as the three seed. That could be very interesting come playoff time if you have to go through Pittsburgh. They would then have to go either to Kansas City or Buffalo. Not as daunting if you just have to win one of those potentially to get to an AFC title game.
Yeah, and that could help. This Mahomes injury could help Pittsburgh get home because – you know, if you lose to the Ravens, okay, now you look at the Chiefs game, and that's tough with Mahomes. It might not be Mahomes. It might not be 100% Mahomes. That might be having an indirect effect where the Steelers, man, the luck just always seems to be on their side. Even when it has nothing to do with them, things seem to go their way.
One other thing, Will. I've kind of buried Cincinnati. 2 weeks ago, they were 14-1. They get that miracle win on Monday night against the Cowboys somehow, some way. Dropped to 11-1. Then you saw it end with the Dolphins today and the Chargers losing today. I'll be curious to see after the Bengals get that win. That number might be down to 5-6-1, somewhere in that vicinity. All I'm saying is Chargers look really bad in that second half today. And I got an adjusted win total of 9.5. That's very much in jeopardy now with these back-to-back losses for L.A. And Miami might have just you kind of wave the proverbial towel after losing that one in the manner in which they did again today in Houston. Cincinnati might be live. And if there's, you know, there's always one team that you don't care if they sneak in the back door as the lowest seed that nobody wants to play, that would be Cincinnati with that all-world offense. So they remind me of like the late 70s, early 80s Chargers, where they couldn't stop anybody, Dan Fouts and company, but man, can they score. If the Bengals figure out a way to get in this thing, that whole AFC could be put on notice. That'd be really interesting if they got a ninth life somehow in the postseason.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at them. They're 6-8. The Chargers are 8-6, right?
And they lost to the Chargers.
And they lost head-to-head. So you're basically, man, if you're Cincy, you got to win out and need the Chargers to lose out. So, that boy, if they miss the playoffs by a tiebreak or something, they're going to have plenty of games to look back. Man, I can't believe we lost to the Patriots at home. Those Ravens games they had, the Charger game they came back. So I think they still have a long road just because of that tiebreaker now.
But don't you feel like that's the team nobody wants to play if they were to get in? Like, I don't know that there's a team in the NFC that you're really scared of. Maybe the Rams. If the Rams figure out a way to get in, maybe that's a team you don't necessarily want to play because McVay, young, talented guys in the D-line. Like, if you're looking for longer shots down the road to win a playoff game or two and you can get those exactas of where they might be eliminated. Boy, if the Rams and Bengals, those would be the two teams that nobody in their respective conferences would want to play. And I think Seattle, by the way, if they can somehow figure out a way to win this division, we have to start looking at that team a little bit more closely. Yeah. They've got a two-headed monster at running back, and Kenneth Walker couldn't even go last week, and they got a big win on the road against Arizona. Geno Smith quietly is playing really good football. They might be another one of those quasi-teams we don't think are good that might be better than we think come playoff time.
Yeah, and just looking at the Chargers' schedule, I know Herbert looked banged up. The defense has been bad. They do get home against the Broncos. Okay, tough game. At the Patriots, at the Raiders. So they're probably going to figure out a way to win one of these games and get in, you would think.
They better win two to get me 10 wins. That's what I need.
That's right. anything for these Monday night games? We've got these weird doubleheader again, which I don't get the rhyme or reason for like why we get two at a time, but whatever. We get two games. Vikings laying about a touchdown to the Bears, and then the Falcons laying four to the hapless Raiders.
I feel like the Bears, and I know they looked awful last week in San Francisco. You can't look a whole lot worse than what we saw. I just feel like they're Sean Penn, dead man walking. I think they'll put up, if they don't put up a fight after how embarrassed they were, maybe look to them the first half. But kind of like these Vikings games go, and you know this better than most, they just kind of figure out, even if they take a punch in the face in the first quarter, they figure out a way. If the Bears don't come out early and jump on a lead, I think they'd be dead. Minnesota really has to be reinvigorated with that Lions loss. And then if you're the Falcons and you saw what the Buccaneers did, and I know it's up to 5.5 against the Raiders, who are an absolute dead team with two wins. If you can't figure out a way to get that win and stay competitive in this division, then Raheem Morris, what are we doing? I know it's year one, but this would be a, shall we say, Titanic-sized collapse if the Falcons aren't even relevant down the stretch.
Yeah, and I laying points on the road with this Falcon team is not like a – it doesn't seem like a great endeavor. Vegas is so bad. They're not going to have any home field advantage. Atlanta still has a good offense. I would think Atlanta figures out a way to win this game by a touchdown or so. I don't know.
It's either a money line parlay for me with the two chalky faves, yeah, or I'll look to over here at Circa. We got those 5-point teases, get a little bit better juice, maybe tease those Vikings down if you can find a 1.5 out there. And if you can tease down the Falcons to a half point or a pick 'em, that's probably the way I'll end up. But, you know, I'm with you. I'm normally not in the divisional games. Laying a touchdown is not normally what you want to do. And certainly on the road, you don't want to lay it all the time with the Falcons. But I do think down the stretch, kind of like those needed games, kind of like Arizona got that needed game today against New England. If they didn't get it, they're out. They figured out a way to make it look easy. I think in the end, it'll be Vikings. It'll be Falcons tomorrow night.
Yeah, I didn't realize that is up to 5.5 in some spots here. Atlanta laying 5.5. Not that 4.5, not that 4, 4.5, 5. Those are all kind of dead numbers, but every point, half point does matter. Last couple, anything college football play, I feel like. Seems like everyone loves Tennessee. I like Tennessee. I'm worried that everyone's kind of on it. But anything, I don't know that I want to lay points in any of these first four games, but what are you interested in?
I'm with you. I'm going to be on Tennessee as well because we're just looking at that defense and you're waiting for Will Howard to make a mistake if you're a Buckeye Nation, right? You're waiting for the Boo Birds to come out and Ryan Day to really feel the pressure at home. And I think all that stuff's real. I don't think this is media fabrications. He's absolutely feeling it. And again, kind of like the Bears, if they don't get off to a good start in that first half, that's going to be – it's almost going to be worse that you're playing at home. The game I like, and I think I'm alone on an island in this one, I like SMU. I was all over Clemson in the ACC title game, and I had to hold on with that miracle long field goal to end it. But I think SMU got a real taste of big boy football last week in that ACC title game. And boy, do they respond when the chips were down to tie that thing up late. When has James Franklin won a big game? And you're going to lay over a touchdown with Penn State? Okay, cool. I'll take those points all day with SMU. And if James Franklin rolls them, I'll tip my cap. But Will, again, two teams that have got to prove it to me in big games, that would be Ryan Day with Ohio State, James Franklin with Penn State. I'll be taking the points on the other side and waiting inevitably for the collapses that these two head coaches seem to engineer.
All right, last one. Let's get it over with. Where were you when you found out Soto was going to the Mets? Who's next on the shopping list? And give me your very brief, very humble Mets takes here.
I'm excited for you guys.
All right, it was good to have you on. Dave Ross, everybody. Go ahead.
You know, of course you and I've been talking about all of the hot stove league, and I think you knew, like, you're so smart. You knew early on, and I knew. I really did feel like this was inevitable. I did think Juan Soto would be a Met. And you remember I tweeted at you in real time, Juan Soto just had his last at bat with the wrong pinstripes. Remember? Like, you know, because you knew eventually, and I don't know why I was so confident that they'd get Soto. Because normally the Yankees just don't get outbid, but this isn't George Steinbrenner's Yankees anymore. This is Kidd, and his Kidd does things differently, and it drives you crazy, and I'm glad it does. But I'll tell you the other thing I like the Frankie Montas deal. I do. Like, I like some of these little, smaller deals. If the Mets get Pete Alonso, and I know you're like, Steve Cohen doesn't care about money. He is like the new George, and he said it. It's just money to me. If I can bring millions and millions of people happiness on the other side of town from the Bronx, so be it, baby. Uncle Steve for president. The Mets are not done. We're going to get the polar bear back in there. I got to tell you, I know the NL East is loaded. Phillies, Braves are not going anywhere. But we are in the fight. And we're not fighting with one hand tied behind our back anymore with the old regime with the Wilpons. It is a new day in Queens, baby. I think the Mets are going to be a team to be reckoned with for the foreseeable future. And I can't remember ever being this confident since the 80s.
Yeah, I like the Mets approach too to these pitchers, where last year it worked with kind of the reclamation project. Hey, we'll take a shot on Manaea. We'll take a shot on Severino. We'll see if we can, you know, get lightning in a bottle. These aren't A-plus names, the Montas team. Clay Holmes, well, I actually think will be decent as a starter, but I like the kind of buy-low approach. So that's your wish list is Alonso, and you're happy. You don't want Burns or – I mean, I'm sure you want him, but what's the pecking order of who you want? Does it start with Alonso?
It does for me, and I'll tell you this. I know we all think about the Oppo home run off Devin Williams. Good get. Devin Williams in Milwaukee, but really it's the gold glove first base. And I know it's first base and people don't talk about that defensively, but he does clean up a lot of things over there. So like I'm really, and Met fans and certainly ownership, I think are really comfortable with Pete Alonso now, not having to have all that burden. And when the burden was on him and you needed him most, he came through. What else do you want? Right now you have Juan Soto either hitting in front or behind him. I'll be curious to see how he manages the lineup. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense to bring the polar bear back and plug him back over there as an all-star at first base.
How many wins? What do you think their over-under will open up? Obviously, there's still some puzzle pieces.
90? This is 91?
I think it'd be a little higher. I think they'll be there's going to be a Soto tax. There's going to be an enthusiasm around.
We can't be 93.
I think it might be 92.
We'd have to play the under.
You think so?
The division's loaded. We're going to beat division's each other tough. Up.
Even Washington's not terrible.
Right. Yeah. I'd love to say that we're going to just clear that hurdle, but there's no guarantee that the Mets aren't the third best team still. Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I mean, Philly still have pitching. Atlanta's finally going to get healthy. We would believe and get all their studs back. So to me, like people, Met fans, and you're not going to find a bigger one than me. Don't fall for that trap of playing that over if it's too high. And Will and I will talk about it a lot, whether it's here or on VEASAN, certainly will, but right. Like don't fall into that trap because you got to remember you can win 90 games, that's probably going to get you a wild card, and that's not that shabby in a really tough NL East.
Yeah, and Met fans don't want to hear that now. Met fans are riding high with Soto. The sky is the limit. They don't want to hear, hey, I got to win a wild card and go back into best 2 out of 3, which anything can happen, even if you're the better team, which we saw it happen. Milwaukee was the better team all year, and they went in and they stole that series. So, I don't know. It's interesting, and a lot will depend on, you know, who they get. I don't think they're done. Whether it's Alonso, whether it's Burns, I think they'll probably add another, you know, big time pitcher. Because if you're going to go on with Soto, and this is, I think, part of the reason why Soto went to the Mets, he was more convinced, hey, if I sign with the Mets, Cohen's not going to put his wallet away. If I sign with the Yankees and Hal, he's going to give me all his money. He might put the wallet back in his pocket, which I think is a fair concern. Yep.
Can I ask one question that I, and by the way, Big Sev, Luis Severino, shouts out to you, sir. 1 year, it was fantastic. Why, like, the disconnect for me is not that Severino left, is that the A's signed him. Did that, like,
yeah, it was strange.
Forget the Mets for a second. Right? Like, I'm trying to figure out that mental math as to why that move was made. Because Severino would have felt like, you know, back-end guy in the Padres, you know, Yankee again, right, something like that. And it surprised me that the A's were the team that went and signed him for a team that's been dumping salary to try to make the move here to Las Vegas. Did that make any sense to you?
No, don't have a good answer for why. I mean, I know there's whispers that they're trying to spend a little more money, trying to keep the Players Association happy, not trying to be just a total embarrassment. And there's a bigger picture here with the Soto thing. We're talking on the field, but the off the field issue of, hey, Soto's, we're going to start opening day. Soto's going to make more money than some of these other teams' payroll. That's not great for the long-term health of baseball, but it's, you know, it's not the Dodgers and the Mets and these spenders' fault. It's the teams that aren't spending. It's their fault.
Yeah. I just, that's the part I just cannot figure out
Strange.
Why. Yeah. Why that move was made. But look, happy for Severino, resurrected his career, I think, last year with this 1 year with the Metropolitans. And maybe that's a move that trade bait at the deadline for the A's. They're probably thinking in that respect.
Yeah. All right, Dale, I got to ask you what last one, Lombardi, UNC, the whole thing. Now, we got to try and be objective about this. We're both going to be rooting for UNC. But, man, this is just from a sports fan's point of view, he's our coworker, he's our friend.
Yeah.
He's at UNC. Belichick's at UNC. It's been a very wild week, 10 days. Do you think this is going to work? Is UNC going to be playing for championships in the playoff here in the next 2 or 3 years?
I cannot imagine a scenario where it – to what extent does it work is the question. I know Belichick and Lombardi are going to be talking college football playoff, right? And Colorado, by the way, I cannot believe in 2 years how close they got to playing in the playoff this year with Deion when he took over an absolute laughingstock of a program in Colorado. Belichick's taking over a better program than what Mack Brown left, and certainly what Deion took over in Boulder. The ACC is still, I don't want to say, it's gotten better, right? There's a little bit more meat and potatoes in there when you get two teams to make the college football playoff. You know I'm going to beat the chest of Syracuse a little bit, and their ascension, and Florida State is down. Miami's still going to be very good. But, you know, when you see 8.5 or 6.5 for the win total, juiced at minus $1.70 to the over. I mean, can we just book Belichick and Lombardi for 7? I hope so, because I do think it's not out of the realm of possibility. But the team that we see now and the team that we're going to see in a bowl game is going to look so dramatically different in a month. And that's Lombardi's job, right? That's what Michael's got to do, is I got to go out there and spend our NIL money like an NFL GM and make this work. Deion did it, and it works. So now that's the charge that Lombardi has. I wonder how much Bill is going to have in that, or if it's really Bill's like, Michael, I trust you. Go get those. I'll sign off on it. Bill's going to sign off on everything. We know that. But that is a massive undertaking to go spend the money. Like Pony Excess, one of my favorite 30 for 30s of all time. And I love those teams as a kid. We're basically talking open air market. Yeah. Pony Express. That's what we're just paying for kids.
Nick Nolte and Blue Chips.
This is not college football. Yeah, this is not college football. This is semi-pro football. That's what we're talking about now here, America. Let's not kid ourselves. And that's why Michael Lombardi is there. I lose a co-host, but UNC gains a real chance to hit that over 6.5 this year in year one.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm still kind of coming to grips with, man, how quickly it happened. And just, man, that's just stunning news. It's weird to... you know, to watch all that news. I think Wednesday night it went down. It's like we're kind of part of that news indirectly, and it's just a very strange news cycle. But Dave, appreciate it, man. This was fun. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
At D Ross Sports on X, also on the IG. As Will knows, we like to have some fun out there in social media. So if you don't take yourself too seriously, fire away anything. I'll respond. That's what I do.
Dave, appreciate the time, man. Thanks.
Anytime, Will.
All right, thank you to Dave Ross. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back Wednesday. See you then.